you know, Seattle voters have that reputation as a left-leaning place. They elected a socialist city council member. They voted for $15 an hour, a minimum wage. Actually, the lefty reputation in Seattle is older than that. Starting in the beginning of the 20th century, union leader Eugene V. Debs looked here to Washington and thought, this is a place where I could build a socialist state. History professor James Gregory at the University of Washington told Ross Reynolds why Debs saw so much lefty potential in Washington.
Well, there were good reasons. It was a brand new state, only 9 years since statehood, and very recently, just that year, had elected its third governor, John Rogers, on the populist ticket. So Rogers was a radical. The Populist Party was quite radical. And so the socialists thought, it's already started. Let's move to Washington.
They thought fertile territory. And he had a plan to get a bunch of people out here, as you say, to colonize, to kind of get a lot of socialists here to convert the state. What was the plan?
Well, the plan was to convince people to go, and he got a lot of publicity when he gave an interview, I think, to the Associated Press, proclaiming that he could, he said, convince 100,000 unemployed workers in Chicago alone to get on trains and come to Washington State. And that got headlines and caused quite a lot of consternation among conservatives in Washington.
So. Yeah, what was the reaction when they heard that 100,000 unemployed Chicagoans were going to be coming to Washington State to turn it into a socialist state?
Yeah, several newspapers were not at all happy about that. But, you know, what was interesting is that the plan sort of fell apart and sort of went forward. Debs lost interest, realized, well, this isn't going to be so easy, and there are better ways to build a socialist movement. But several hundred socialists did sell their life belongings in various states and moved to Washington State and established a number of colonies, the first and sort of most famous of which was called Equality. And it was established in Whatcom County, not too far from Bellingham, and about 300 families built sawmills and dormitories and schools and published a newspaper there and proceeded with this plan to try to convince to win elections in Washington State.
And people who go to Whidbey Island, they see the town of Freeland, which actually has its origins back with the Eugene Debs Initiative, right?
Exactly. Freeland started as a socialist colony. And many of these colonies didn't last very long. Equality burned down and people left. Freeland lasted a while longer. There was a very interesting colony at Burley on Kitsap Peninsula and another one which had the great name Home, H-O-M-E. It was sort of more anarchistic than socialist, and that lasted a long time. That's down on the Kitsap Peninsula. There's still a cute neighborhood that celebrates that heritage.
Ironic, isn't it, that the anarchistic colony would last longer than the socialist colonies?
Yeah, well, they were in some ways doing things a little better. They were looser about all the forms of organization, and some people lived there as late as the 1960s.
We're talking about Washington State and Seattle's reputation as a left-leaning place. So we learned how Washington State got this left-leaning reputation in the early 1900s, even before that. Let's focus on Seattle now. And part of what you cover is how the Great Depression helped to cement the city's left-leaning reputation. Tell us what was going on in Seattle during the Depression in the 30s.
Well, the Depression hit Washington State very hard, harder than the country as a whole. And unemployment rates probably hit about 35% at some points in maybe 1932. And in those days, unemployment pretty much led to homelessness because there was no unemployment insurance, and one-income families led to lots of desperation. So Seattle experienced big increases in homelessness and lots of desperation, but a kind of a community of radicals that had been around for decades mobilized some interesting responses to it. And I'm intrigued by the difference between what they did in the 30s and what people have done in the Great Recession.
These days, you can go across the street from KUOW and there's a small tent encampment. But there was what's called a Hooverville in Seattle back in the 1930s, which is a giant encampment.
Yeah, the biggest Hooverville was located near where the stadiums are today, and at some points had a couple of thousand residents. It lasted a long time and was talked about as the sort of biggest and longest lasting Hooverville in the country. The reason it lasted a long time was because of the political power that the unemployed movements developed in 1931 and 32. So a group not so much from the Hoovervilles, but from West Seattle, created an organization called the Unemployed Citizens League, where they gathered unemployed people and they shared work and barter clubs and various things, but they also figured out how to be very effective politically. They demanded of the city and state government jobs and relief services. By 1932, they had easily 10,000 members in Seattle, enough to influence the mayoral election that year. So when John Doerr was elected mayor in 1932, he owed his victory to this Unemployed Citizens League.
You say that Seattle has a reputation as a left-leaning place, but in reality, is it? We also know that part of our history was the activity of removing the Chinese, the Ku Klux Klan. Knut Berger has been documenting in Crosscut, a series, the Nazi activity that took place here before World War II. Is it that clear that we were a left-leaning city?
Well, I use the term reputation, and reputation and reality are way, way different, as we know. And in truth, Seattle has had a very checkered history of conservative eras and liberal eras, and never really have radicals been in charge. It's not a particularly radical city. We have this reputation. We've had some really electrifying incidents and some very powerful movements that come and go. But, you know, Seattle should never be thought of as a left-wing city.
And as in fact you've pointed out, there are some cities in the United States that have actually had far-left leadership.
Yeah, and the United States as a whole has this very kind of awkward, radical history of movements that come and go and are really very, very influential in the way that European left movements are. You know, there are cities and states and whole countries in Europe that are regularly governed by socialist parties or socialist-leaning parties. That's not the case in the United States. It is in Canada. You know, British Columbia's had the New Democratic Party, which is socialistic. The United States doesn't have that kind of history, but some states do, not ours. Milwaukee managed to elect socialist mayors for almost half a century. Vermont.
Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. Vermont seems to like to vote for now 30 years for a fellow who calls himself a democratic socialist. So there are places that have a more genuine claim to having a radical history.
That's University of Washington historian James Gregory questioning whether our left-leaning reputation is actually true. Talking there with KUOW's Ross Reynolds.